Okay, today's up is tough tet vav, and last year we ended by discussing various like gestures, if you like, that might imply a kinyan. Okay, and when we, for example, the mocher placed the kones items in the house, that was one, or he handed over the bucket for the well, things like that. Now we were sort of explaining it to be that it was giving him over like mamash, an act of kinyan itself. However, the way I wasn't particular on this enough, because the Korban Eder says, "Havalei ku'omer lo lech." Look up late in the Shari Korban, and he explains what that means is it is not exactly kinyan itself, because that's in the chazaka. Right? Chazaka demonstrates ownership through actually doing something more substantial than that, and rather than just holding the bucket or taking hold of the bucket, you have to use it. No? So he understands. Other people cholik on that, by the way, but he explains. I can't remember who quotes that. He explains that it is equivalent to the seller saying, "Go and do a chazaka," and therefore he doesn't have to hear the words "go and do chazaka." He can just go and do a chazaka, and then he'll acquire it. That's what it is saying. So it's a different way of understanding the sugya. Meaning, is it the first way of understanding the sugya was it's equivalent to actually doing the kinyan of some sort? And here it's more like saying the way the Korban explains the flow of the sugya, it's more like this is more of an authorization or an intent being expressed by the seller for you to go ahead and do a chazaka, but it's not the kinyan itself. So there's like the two ways of explaining it. But anyway, in any event, the question we left it was is what about the following case? Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi ba'i, masalot ha-mafteach mahu. If he hands over the key, is handing over a key a strong enough gesture? Okay, of intent. So the Gemara now says, Amar Rabbi Zachariah, chatnei de Rabbi Levi, machloket, it's a machlok ben Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Datanina tamay bulen ha-mishnah, moser mafteach la-ama-aretz, if he hands over his key to an Amaretz. And Am Haaretz is someone who's not necessarily careful with laws into a mantara, keys to his house. The bayit is taor. Why? Because understanding is I've given over my keys to my Am Haaretz friend, I just want him to look after the keys for me. Okay. Shlomo Salish Mafteach. However, Tani Rabbi Shimon says, Matame. No, when you hand over the keys, you basically gave him the rights to actually go into the authority to go into the house and do whatever he likes. And therefore, because he goes into the house, he's going to Matame everything inside the house. So you see here, there's already a debate in terms of handing over a key. Does it imply more than just I'm giving you the key to hold or not? Okay. So to here, handing over a key, is that enough of a gesture of a kinyan or not? Okay. That's the, it could just be hold the keys. Which is like, you know how they, in these game shows, that, here's the keys to your car, hold them. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm giving it to you. It's just to entice you for the sale or something like that. It doesn't mean anything necessarily. That could be what Chachamim is saying. Rabbi Shimon says, no, you're handing over the keys, here's your new car. Saying, Chazek v'chani. So there's the, if you like, that's the debate. Now, Rabbi says, B'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Hamocher ma'asrot tzedeu l'chaver, or lo asav. Let's say he has a field. I'm just looking over a field right now, from where I am, where I'm on holiday, but as I looked out the window. But anyway, sorry for that distraction. He says if he sells the master of his field, and does it work? Meaning, I'm selling you the master of my field. So any master that grow in this field are going to be yours, year on year basis. So the Gemara says, well, that doesn't work. That it does not work, because this is the Vashalo Bayal Olam. This is something that doesn't yet exist in the world. Vlad Shifchato Shel Chaviro, the offspring, once again, lo davashalo, it's about davashalo balam, so lo asa klum. Ubre behemto, the offspring of an animal, lachaviro lo asa velo klum, because the animal's not, well, the assumption here, we can go around with the suga, the animal's not even pregnant yet, so how can you sell it? What about avir churvato lachaviro? What about the airspace in his churva? Churva is like a ruin. So airspace in, does that work? Now here, airspace is interesting because what would he need it for? Let's say that he wants to, it's a neighbor wants to make a balcony stick over. So he's using your airspace. Can you sell airspace? That's again something like lepo mamash. There's no substance to airspace. So you can't lo asav lo klum. Ella, what could he do? How could you go ahead? Ella mocher sadeu mashar masrota. What you could do is the opposite. I can sell my field and retain the rights of the masrot in it. Okay, so I can't do it the other way around. I can't sell the rights of Masrot to somebody else or the Masrot that grow in the field. But if I have a field, I can sell my field and then retain the Masrot. Why does that work? What's the difference? Korban Eder says, "De kol ha-mashiach ba'ein yafet mashiach." When someone leaves something on, he's leaving for everything that's required of him. Let's put it that way. Then it's as if he's leaving, retaining whatever is necessary in order to have the masrot. So it might be within the gufa karka itself, whatever it means. Meaning, in order to be able to retain the maaser, when he's selling the land, it says I'm retaining the maaser. It means he's not really selling 100% of the land itself. He's retaining whatever percentage needed in order that he can retain the masrot. Okay, so this might give us a hint to how you'd be able to go ahead and sell master of the field to somebody else that will grow. Again, v'gufu ba'olam, the guf is still here. The dvar sheyesh bo masha has some substance. So he's retaining some share in the land, physical land itself, thereby which he'll be able to have the master. That's how it could work. Similarly, if he sells his animal and he can mishayer, if he can retain something in the sale, so he can have the rights to the vlad. Or mocher l'churba, he can sell the. I think I missed one. It was a mocher l'shivcha mesher v'lada, mocher be'ma mesher v'lada, or mocher l'churba as well mesher l'vlada. So Gemara says, v'heich efshar la'aladam l'mkor avir churbata l'chaverob. Let's say not. Let's say the friend wants to actually buy some of your airspace to put a balcony in where your churba is. How can you sell that then? You don't want to. It's not the other round. You don't want to sell the churva. You want to retain the churva. The Gemara says, "Tiftar ba'omer lo tlosh min churva haser shetikneh echad ma'aser shabbat." What you have to do is you have to sell them if you like a share in the land itself in order to do so, which is a which is like effectively what we already are hinted to in the previous day, meaning you can sell your land and retain some of the avir because by doing so you'd be retaining some of the land in order to be able to do so. So too, if you want to sell some of the airspace to someone, well, airspace itself has no mamashut. What you could do is you can sell him, say, grab, take some a chelik of the land through which has mamashut, you can have some of the airspace.
So
Okay.
you need all of the land to have the airspace.
Well, it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound like that. It sounds like, in other, no, in the same way, no, firstly, it's not necessarily all the airspace. Maybe he's just selling some of the airspace, whatever it is. But in other words, but the point is that I'm not sure if it's literally to make this, in the case of airspace, I'm not sure if it's literally I need to have own the land under the airspace. I don't know if that has to be the case. The issue is airspace is not something that has mamashut. So I need to be able to sell him. He has to have some part of the mamashut karaka in order to take airspace with it. So it might be possible. It might be possible to have a 1% share in the land and a 10% share in the airspace. I've no idea, but he has to have some sort of substance in the land in order to have to purchase, if you like, some of the airspace. That's what the Gemara is telling us. He has to have some mamashut acquisition. Okay. Now. And similarly, as well, Tifta ba'omer tlosh min ha'churva, and also v'chol karka lafana ba'omer tlosh min ha'karka, take some of the share in the land, azesh tikneh lo echad mi'maaser shebo. You can take the maaser from it. Okay, same idea. Now, Rav Shmuel, Rav Zira, Rav Chiya bar Ashi says b'shem Rav, ein meshicha koneh b'chatzor she'enu shel shteihen. Now, we know that meshicha is a act of acquisition, right? He's purchasing something from somebody else. How does he do so? He draws that which belongs to the seller, the purchaser draws it towards himself. Now, the problem is that has to be a demonstration of it's coming to my reshut. So therefore, meaning into my possession. So the question is, the location where this is occurring is going to be very, very important. Okay. In other words, if I'm pulling it towards me and I'm still, for example, let's make an obvious case, I'm still in the property of the seller, well, you haven't actually demonstrated because you're still in his property. Okay, and if it's in your property, you might have to pull it in at all because it's a virtue in your property. But the debate we're going to see at the moment is it says that it cannot be ein meshicha koneh bechatzar she'enu shel shneihem, that it can't be done in somebody else's property. Okay, it has to be done either in a shared property between the two of them, or the way that Pnei Moshe explains it in this the tzidei rishus harabim, on the sides of rishus harabim. In other words, that's the locations where Meshicha as an acquisition can work because it's something going from you to me. So we have to have like equal footing, let's call it, in that domain for it to work. So Tani Rav Chiya, but Rav Chiya is Pali. When does Metaltlin work Meshicha? In either Rosh Hashanah, he just says it can be in Rosh Hashanah or even a Chatzah Shneihem. It can even be in a third party's field. So that's the machloket he can see. Also, aval brashut alokeach, if nushut alokeach, don't need to even do meshicha, kimet she kibel alav zachah. I mean, if it's in the purchase of property, and he says, I'd like to buy it, the chatzar does it. If, however, it's brashut amocher, if it's in the seller's property, well, then lokana, that won't work, ad she agbia, or until he does hagba'ah, because lifting it up off the ground, hagba'ah works anywhere. Or Anshashashi, or can't lift it, have to do Mashiach. Like with an animal, he'd have to take it all the way Anshishmachviatzemirshotabalim. He'd have to go all the way to Rishotabalim to do so. That's when Mashiach would work. Now, the Gemara says, fine. It says, what happens though if the seller has entrusted his possession in a third party's property? Okay? And they're in that third party's property, and now the purchaser. So again, Reuven wants to sell something to Shimon, but Reuven entrusted in Levi's house. Okay, so it's entrusted to Levi. So they go, Shimon's now at Levi's house. He wants to do Mashiach to acquire it. Now, is that considered, well, whose property by definition is that? Gemara now says, Lo kana ad she'yizkeh hu bahen. He wouldn't purchase unless he does hakba'ah, or ad she'yishkor lo et ha'mekomo, or he rents some of the location for it, where it's situated. Why is that? The Korban Eder explains here that Lo kana, why? Because Alokeach doesn't require Mashiach. The mistama, Hikna. When Reuven gave his property over to Levi, it says Minastam Levi sort of gave him the Rashut where the thing is located or in the property. So therefore, that location is considered like, if you like, Rashut Sabalim. So therefore, do Meshich in there is not considered Meshich in a third party at all. It's considered Rashut Sabalim. So that's why I said you have to do Akbar, or you have to like, from the Shimon have to from Levi say, I'm want to rent some of your space to make it his reshut, or obviously until he schleps it all the way out. Okay, even though I think I'm saying obviously, even though the Gemara didn't say that, but that would I think that's what's implicit. Now the Gemara says, we know with Chachamim, when it becomes a bema daka, light animals, if you like small animals like a lamb, even though we saw previously Rebbe Lazar says, yeah, Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Lazar said you have to do hagba'ah, you have to lift it up. We said that a Chachamim say you have to do it with Meshicha. Sorry, you can, let's say, also do it with Meshicha. You don't have to do Agba, you can pull it out. Now the Gemara says, my time of the Rabbanan, what's the proof of Rabbanan? Because it says, Mishchu chulachem tzol mishpachotahem, that's by Korban Pesach. Draw towards you a Korban, so you can see Meshicha works, no? So therefore, the Korban Eden now says, explains that we're going to use it to explain the continuation. Kihad Rabbi Yehuda Shalach, he sent us following, Lishol behema gasa b'manik net. When it comes to a large animal like a cow, how is it niknet? So Amalei, the Mesira, we just, isn't that Mufresh the Mishnah? You're just handing over the reins, for example. So Amrulei, velo matnitahi, but isn't this what it says in the Mishnah anyway? Then Magasa niknet Mesira. So Gemara says, it tani tani michlaf. So it tani tani michlaf means as follows. Meaning, I'll show you the Korban. Yesh time shemach lefim v'tani b'manita chachamim urim af be Magasa niknet Meshicha. Because the way we have the Mishnah is, all it says is Bema Gasa is Nikne Bemasira. And the debate that follows looks like it's only referring to Bema Taka. So, meaning, it says Vachamrim Bema Taka Nikne Bemashicha. However, since there's other people that have the reading, the Chachamim are also cholek on the Reisha, that even a Bema Gasa has to be done, say, with Mashicha, and you can't just do necessarily Masira, then we've got a question now, what can you do with Bema Gasa? So that's why he had to come out of our way and tell us that says, no. Chachamim are only cholek when it comes to behemah daka. They will agree with the behemah gasa, meaning a cow, that Mesir is sufficient. How so? Because, again, this I think the way Korban explains it, because the pasuk, Mishchu chulem tzonu mishpartem, meaning tzon is through Meshicha, implying that behemah gasa you can use a lighter form. Okay, because daka, if otherwise the Torah would say all behemot are done with Meshicha. Okay, let's continue. Now, having mentioned Yehuda's discussion with Rabbi Lazar, we see a number of cases like that. So we do you'll see the Regula, Shaul, Rabbi Lazar, a number of cases that seem to be not necessarily related to directly what we're doing. So the first one is Rabbi Yehuda Shaul, Rabbi Lazar, Bechor shnitraf betoch shloshim. Let's say we go to Bechor. Now, Bechor, what's the deal? And Bechor Adam, we're talking about that there's a mitzvah to do Pidyon Bechor, no? But however, something happened. Tarfach toch 30 yom leleidato. It was born healthy, but some tragedy happened of some sort that it became a trefa. Okay? And the according to the first understanding, the Korban, it's still alive. So I'll read the Korban anyway. He says, Miyamrena ilav the nitraf. Do we say, had that child not become a trefa, it would have been bari all the 30 days? And therefore, you have to do a pinyan b'chor. The love, we don't define it like a nefel. The chayav b'pidyon, you have to still do a pinyan b'chor. Or maybe, dilma hashta mi'a lo chay 30 yom. That's no longer going to survive 30 full days. Or patur. Okay, because a Nephil doesn't need to do so. So the Amalei, I missed a bit, sorry. So Amalei, no, he's considered like it's a Nephil, and he doesn't have to do Pinya Bechor. That is the that's the answer. Now, Rav Yehuda, next question. Shalach Sha'al Rabbi Elazar. That's the following case. Shilya. Shilya is like a fatal sack, an amniotic sack. Shiatza miktata yom miktat machar. Now, the thing is, we say ain shilya below vlad, right? If it comes out, there must be a vlad, and if we can't see the blood, it must be inside it. Okay. The problem is, it was bridging. We don't know when the blood that was, say, inside the fetal sac was actually born because it bridged 2 days. Why is that important? Because we treat it like a later, as if it's born. Now, a later, when a woman gives birth, there's a period of tumah and a period of tahara. Again, it's the Tara days are 40, 80 between a boy and girl, and of that, I should say, the Tuma time is a week or 2 weeks for a girl. So you're machmir if you like both the shorter Tara and the longer Tuma because you don't know the gender necessarily. But the problem is, we also don't know whether this child effectively the blood was born because the sac took a long time to like to come out and bridge 2 days. So the Gemara now says, what do we do? Amarle im ledam tahor. The dam tohar, if we said that's a tahara period after, moneh, you just have to be lahachmir miyom rishon. You have to assume it came out earlier. Because again, we have to be machmir once again. Vim ledam tuma, tmeya, tame, sorry, moneh miyom sheni. Then you count from the second day. Okay? So, meaning we have to be machmir, that maybe the blood actually was part of that sac actually came out, if you like, later. So Amrav Maya, that's only vlad. That's only if the fetal sac came out on its own. Aval im vlad, if a blood came out, bein ledam tahor, bein ledam tameh, what do you count? We don't assume there might be another blood with that sac. We just say, okay, we go by the blood itself. Yitzata blood. Good. Now the Gemara now says, Rav Yehuda shalach l'Rav Elazar. He asks another question. Shomer If a shomer passed or handed on to another shomer, what's the din? This discussion is going to take us most of the rest of the shir. Meaning, is he allowed to do so? And something happens, not just who is allowed to, who is chayev? So let me just explain here. He says, we'll see in a minute. Sorry, it's the next piece. So Amar Le Harishon Chayev. The first Shomer was entrusted by the owner. He is Chayev for responsibility. So I'll just show you. This is the part I want to show you. The Korban says Bechol Mashu Chayev Kesha Etzlo Din Baali Masheni Ela Harishon. The first understanding is whatever responsibility he took on as being a Shomer, however the Shomer is, he is responsible. And if something happens with the second Shomer, the Baalim says, look, I've got no interest in this third party you involved. My discussion is with you. Therefore, I'm taking you to court, if you like, to pay. I've got no shaykhus to this other person you gave it to. That's one way of understanding it. However, another understanding is as follows. Which is interesting. What we're saying now is, the second pshat is, that even if there's some sort of onus occurs, and this will be important for the later sugya, meaning something that's completely out of control that the shomer, both shomer, wouldn't be chayev for. Let's assume it's a shomer that is such that he's not chayev for onsin. Nonetheless, he would still be chayev. Because he can say, what are you trusting somebody else? I trusted you, not somebody else. So if you like, by handing it over, suddenly he bears a much greater responsibility for it leaving his care, the shomer. Okay? That's what it says, Rishon Chayev. Now Rabbi Yochanan says Rishon Chayev, and Rabbi Shimon Malachi says no, Hashem is chayev. So we'll discuss this in a minute. Taman Tanina, it says, Asocher pra mechavro v'shilo lacher. Let's say someone, he rents a cow from his friend. Vishila, and then he lends it to somebody else. Umeta kedarka, and it died normally. Okay? Yishava socher, shemeta kedarka. Now the socher, this is person number one. So Reuven rented it to Shimon. Shimon lent it to Levi. So let's have a look. The borrower, someone who borrows, has a much higher level of responsibility than a renter does. Okay, so what happens is and it died in its normal way. So a socher wouldn't be chayv in that situation because it died as a part of its normal use. However, a shoel would. So it says metakadarka yishava a socher. The socher can just make a shvua if he can do so that it died. Metakadarka just happened to die through no negligence, no overwork, no nothing. And the shoel would nonetheless meshalem the socher. But the shoaleh has a greater responsibility than our levi, the third in our chain. He would pay the socher. So Amram Rabbi Yossi, this is a Mishnah. He says, Amram Rabbi Yossi, he says, or the also here, Ketzad hala oseh schor b'parat Rosh Chodesh. He seems to think that's completely unfair. Because Shimon, it seems to be profiting from this venture, if you like. So it should really go all the way, Shetachzor LeBalim, should go all the way back to the Balim. So in other words, why? Eletachzor para LeBalim, this is to understand Rabbi Yossi first. The Korban Eder says, Mishum dechashiv socher ki ilu ishila bishluchot maskir. Because when the maskir lent it out, we consider as if he was doing it as an agent of the owner. Okay? So therefore, hilkach dina maskir emashoel, so the person who rented it, so Reuven, can deal directly with Levi as a result. Okay, that's a machloket we have. We haven't yet gotten to the meat and potatoes of the sugya yet, but that's a mission we're trying to prove. Now remember that our objective in exploring this case is to understand the din of a shomer masal shomer. Okay, so once again, what happens? Chachamim say if a socher then lends it out, so Shimon rented it and he lent it to Levi as a shoel, and there's some sort of metika darka. Well, kana chachamim, as long as Shimon can make a shvu that was metika darka, he doesn't have to pay Reuven at all, but he can get compensated, if you like, make money off this from, if you like, Levi, whereas Rabbi Yossi says it's ridiculous. Shimon is only really at the best connected as a shaliach, and the money would go all the way back to the original owner. Now, Rabbi Ilyas says, "B'shem Yar Bianai, for who shenatan l'reshut la'ashil." This halachlok is only if Reuven allowed Shimon to lend it out. However, it's like when you rent a car and you can sign a contract of who else is going to be able to drive it or not. So this situation when Reuven allowed Shimon to rent it out, to lend it out. Aval im lo natan reshut la'ashil lo bada. If, however, Shimon did not allow it, so Reuven did not allow Shimon to lend it out, then Shimon would absolutely be chayav. But not just that, goes even further. Show the Korban Eder. He says there's two ways to understand it. Sorry, my mistake, not two ways. He explains as follows. Lo baze amru chachamim sasochi shava lemaskir, ela socher chayav afilu ba'omtzin. Sheshina midat ha'baal v'avale posheya tikzav v'shomer acher chay ba'onsin. In other words, what this is saying is, even if it's a case of complete honest, the socher would absolutely be chayev because he wasn't allowed to lend it out. So as soon as he lends it out, he's considered negligent. And in a case of negligence, even though in practice it may have been some sort of crazy honest that occurs, nonetheless, he's now absolutely chayev because his Boshe was never allowed to lend it out. So the whole discussion we have, the whole debate, is if he was authorized to lend it out. Fine. V'tani Reb Chiya ken, ein shol rashai la'ashil. A shol is not allowed to, a borrower is not allowed to borrow it out. V'lo socher rashai la'askir, rent is not allowed to rent it out. V'lo shol rashai la'askir, v'lo socher rashai la'ashil. V'lo mishu hufkad etzlo rashai la'afkid. If it was entrusted in him, you can't entrust anyone else. Etzal acher, elim ken not rushum la'abayim, unless he, only if he took rushum from the Baalim. So Gemara says, v'kulam shishinu midat ha'abayim, if you went against the intents of the owner, then we say, you were chayev, according to the way of explaining it, even in a case of oneness. Fine. Gemara said, what do you want? But shol afilu shina chayev. But shol, isn't a shol also chayev? No. Gemara says, yes, I know, even though it was superfluous, ilu begin to taninan and taman. The reason why the thing is, it's not superfluous, even though, yes, a shol is always chayev in oneness anyway, because sometimes a shol can stipulate. Let's say someone borrowed someone, says, look, I want to borrow if you have one condition, you treat me like a shomechina, meaning I don't want the full responsibilities of a normal shol. Meaning if it's stolen, I don't want to pay you. And the guy says, absolutely fine, you can take it. In this situation, for example, exempt from even taking an oath or something like that. So he'll be exempt from paying. Meaning, even in a situation where the shul made some, let's say, amazing stipulation, he made great conditions of conditions, says, you know, I want to borrow from you, but I really want to relieve you all these high levels of transmission normal shul has. But without any reshut, he goes off and lends it to somebody else. Forget whatever conditions he made about his personal responsibility. He was absolutely negligent by lending it to somebody else. He'd be chayev. That's what it said. That's the chiddush of what we're just explaining. Fantastic. Now the Gemara says, "Bikesh lashpiyat ha-shoel." What happens though? Back to our original case, the Chachamim. So let's qualify it. The machloka we saw was that someone rented it and lent it out. Importantly, we said he had permission, he was allowed to do that. And we said on Kohen Chachamim, if then it was Meta Kedarka, the Socher just has to make a shvur that it was Meta Kedarka. He doesn't have to pay the owner, that Shimon has to pay Reuven, and he can be take the money from Levi, the Shoel, now to pay. Now the Gemara says, however, but one second. Let's say the Shoel, the Shimon says, look, you don't have to make any shvua, just pay up. We'll be done with it. But no. The owner would be in its interest to make the Shoel make a Shavua. Why? Because if it was gross negligence, then he would be chayv to pay all the way back to, although he have to pay all the way back. So in other words, or so I'll just read it inside, or it might be that the Shoel says, granted, you want me to make a Shavua, but I've got no dealings with you. I borrowed from Shimon, so therefore get out of here. So that's what the question is. I'll just show you the Korban Eder. He says, he says, Mau shiach or Dilma Matzi Meimar, or maybe you can say, late, you're not my Baal Dvarim, you're not, I've got nothing to do with you. Okay, fine. So the Gemara now says, we can learn from the following case. Sorry, I didn't need to, yes, I didn't really need to read that, but fine. Nishmini min hada, katavla ne, Lord, what happens if a woman is an apotropos, she's in charge of the property of her husband. And he writes, Katavla neder ushva in alecha. You know, I'm also exempting you from normally apotropos. You can mashpia an apotropos that the apotropos dealt faithfully, like an executive of some sort or a manager. And he says to his wife, but don't worry, he writes off any rights to make a neder or shvua. You can operate freely, complete trust. I can never make you make shvua. Then mashpia, he cannot do so. Aval mashpia, what he can do, et yorsheya v'etabein brushuta. But he can, for example, mashpia yorsheya, meaning if he divorced her or she died, and the yorsheya now are claiming the ketubah, okay? Then mashpiin shelo ikva klum mishvua. Then, in other words, sorry, I explained in terms of apotropos, but we'll get to that in a second. But also with the case of ketubah, right? If she wants to, in other words, a husband normally can make, let's say, make his wife make a shvua that she hasn't taken anything when she wants a ketubah. So he can make such a shvua. He can say exempt him from a shvua, but let's say he divorces, let's say her yorshim comes, she dies, and they want to claim the ketubah. So she divorced and she died. Then he can make them make a shvua. Okay. Hada amra shim bikesh lashpia tashoel shu mashpia. So this seems to prove that despite the fact I make a deal with her, the next person in the chain, I can make a shvua, which is a proof for here, despite the fact that he made a particular agreement with a socher that he can leapfrog the socher and make the shoel make a shvua. Okay? I'll just show you here. One second. It says, in other words, another step down the chain. So to Achinami, okay. The Gemara said, "Hada yalfa min hahi v'hahi yalfa min hada." That both cases can learn one from the other. Meaning, "Hada yalfa min hahi shim bikesh lashpia." I'm not sure if you have those two lines. It's in my Gemara. Lashpia tashoel mashpia, already the point we derived. V'hahi yalfa min hada. But we can also learn back to the case of the woman and the yorshim. Shim bikesh lashpia tisha shu. So what's this referring to? I'll show you the Korban Eder. Actually, it's kind of explaining. This is we'll see later. Sorry, this is explained as in the continuation. This would be, for example, he gave her reshut to other people to take la'amid achrim b'mkoma, other people to take her place. For example, Amar Abchina says lo nitzuchal me'elav min ha'hi, meaning we don't need to learn min hahi. So lo titcha melach min hahi, meaning Korban Eder says ha lo itzrich la melach mahatam de migufresha min adavke shepatra mishvua hu de inu mashpia aval beshlo patra mashpia. Obviously we know. So in other words, the Havamina, what we can learn from there to here, that if he didn't putter his wife, he could make a shvua. Okay, so sorry, I jumped the gun. I just want to explain this carefully. What the Gemara is saying is that's obvious. We already know that if he didn't exempt from making a shvua, he couldn't make a shvua, because why would you even think otherwise? So that's what I was trying to say here, that even though he gave her a reshut for other people to take in her stead, you might think it's implicit in that is exempting him from making a shvua. The answer is no. In other words, to exempt to make a shvua, it has to be explicit. That's avadai. However, because Amarav Yifanin, Elonis Chalamelev Chada Minahi, Umatrich Minahi, what we learned the other way around, Ki Hai Da Amar Demar Rav Hila Vishem Rav Yanai, for who Shantan Lashoel. In other words, when is it, if you like, okay, sorry, that when do we say in our Mishnah that the dealings, that, sorry, that the socher is patur if he lent it out? That's only got reshut to lend it out. So to hachat the epitropin. So this is what we get to catch up with I was talking about. So let me just explain. So matzrich, now look at the korban. It's important to read it inside. He says ki mahatam. That's only if he allowed, he gave her a shoot to make her oyorshim like aputropim, like being in control of the finances. Ki hada amar Rav Hila dematnitin da socher ayir bishnat rosh. Just as we saw before, Rav Hila said that the whole machlok between Rabbi Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi is only when he allowed the socher to go and lend it out. Hachinami, this is a critical part. Bishnatan reshut yubanei aputropin, aval lo natan reshut. If he didn't give a reshut, the atzma asta bnei aputropin. And then what happened is she ended up saying, "Oh, I'm in control of the state. You know, I'll let my boys take control now." Afal pisha patra shvua, despite the fact his agreement with her is if you're in control, I'm not going to make you make a shvua. He never authorized her to go ahead and hand over control to somebody else. And if she did that, all the agreement's off. Now I can make you make a shvua. Kedarmina gabal, just as like a shoel. Shepatru liyot kashomer chinam. Just as we saw the previous case, we said if a shoel is patru like a shomer, like a shomer chinam. Great, patru from ones. But the shoel goes ahead and lends it and tries to lend it lends it to another shoel. We said, given shna, as soon as he goes against a dat balim, all bets are off. You're not chayev, you've got his bail, you're like your posheya now. So to here would be the same thing. So let me just say it more clearly. In other words, both cases can learn one from the other. The first way we learned it is that we can learn that in a case where there was a nice agreement, where the socher was allowed to lend it out, we still say the bailing, we can learn from the case of the isha. That the just if the husband says you're patur from shvua, and then he divorces and she dies and Yerushim want to collect the ketubah, we say I can make you make a shvua. So too, in other words, so too we learn that the socher can leapfrog the owner can leap from the socher and make the shoel make a shvua. That's one learn that's learning from the case of, let's call it, marriage to financial arrangements. So too goes the other way around as well. Meaning, when the Baal is poter the Isha from a Shvuah, that's, and, but that's, if she wants, if you want that to stick, unless if she didn't get Reshut, let's make it more clearly, if she didn't get Reshut to trust other people to be Apotropos, despite the fact that the husband said, look, I'm not going to make a Shvuah regarding any of your dealings, that's provided she doesn't go against the Ratzon of the husband. But in other words, he didn't allow her to pass over control to anybody else. And if she did, it's continuing to push out. And if you like, the original can just off and you can make a shvuah. Okay. Sorry, let's go. It's a bit of a longer daf today, but let's continue. I hope that's more clear. It wasn't clear in the beginning, but I think we got it in the end. Amrav Yosef, tzirich la'alot lo schar kol zman shu schura etzlo. So in other words, we've just said that despite the fact that the socher, Al Shimon, can lend it to Levi, you've got Reshut to do that. And Levi's going to pay Shimon in a case where it's meant to Gedarka, and Shimon has to pay the owner. Shimon still has to pay the rental from the time that he had use of it. That's what they're saying. Now, Rav Zira Sha'al Rav Avina, Sha'alua Chachamim Umeta. What happens, and this is a fascinating case. Reuven rented it to Shimon. Now, Reuven says, actually, I know it's in rental contract, but can I borrow it this afternoon? So the owner borrowed it back within the rental period. So in that situation, and then it died kedarka. Now, if you follow what the Chachamim said initially, when it was Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, Levi paid Shimon, and Shimon didn't have to pay anything to Reuven. So this would be a bizarre situation. Reuven, in this situation, Reuven is also Levi in our story. It's become a loop. You might think now that the owner would have to end up paying the renter, and the renter doesn't pay the owner anything. Do we say the same thing? Amar le, can anan kaimin afilu achluha? No, absolutely not. He can even, if you like, eat it. Okay. Amrav Yossi, why? Because Shelahem Achlo. Because we say the owner is considered eating his own thing and it's not considered like a responsibility thing that you have to worry about it. We don't look at it as him like a third party in this situation. It's his animal. Fine. Negmar says, Rabzir by Kamei Rav Yasa. Heyach Avin Uvda. How do we paskin about in the case of a Shomer Hamasar Lashomer? Is it okay? Is it not okay? That's a machloket. So Amrali, because we're back to square one. Amrali, train called Kabil Arba, lo avdin uvda, lo avdin b'besugya. He says, look, it's two against four. Why is it two against four? Because he says, you've got Rabbi Lazar, sorry, you've got Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yanai, and Rabbi Chiya Barabbas, we said, they're all saying the Rishon is Chayav. And you've got Rabbi Yehuda, who asked Rabbi Lazar, and you also got Rish Lakish that said the Sheni is Chayav. So four against two, game over, like it's, we go Barov. Gemara says, no, it's actually train. It's actually no. It's Amalei trei kol kabel trei inon. It's two against two because Rebbe Lazar is a Talmuder of Chiya Rabba and Rebbe Yochanan is a Talmuder of Yanai. So you can't count the Talmidim of the position as an independent position. Fine. Now, Rebbe Yehuda Shalach, so it's left with a question really in terms of what's the din of Shomer, who is Chayav. Now, Rebbe Yehuda Shalach, Sha'al, again, another case, Rebbe Yehuda Shalach and Sha'al Rebbe Lazar. Let's say the father passed away. And okay, this is what happened in the story. One of the brothers, if you like, passed away having his children. Okay, so let's say the three brothers in the estate. Okay, now when one does yibum, he gets the share of his brother. Okay, but what happened is before yibum occurred, the two remaining brothers divided the estate of their father. And then one of them goes and does yibum. What's interesting here is, well, what do we do now? Meaning, do we have to realign? Because really, there were three people that had a share in the estate of the father. So let me just get this right. So let me get this right. So the father died first. It had to be that way. Sorry, the father died first, and then one of the brothers died with having his children. So when the father died, really, the estate should have gone three ways. But then the brother died without having children. Now, v'chalku achim and the other ones simply divided equally. V'achar kach, and then one of the brothers did yibum. Mao shiachzol kulam mechelek. Do we now go back to the beginning and divide it 2 to 1 or not? Because really, the brother in yibum should have had a two chelek share to one, the one chelek of the brother that didn't yibum in the state. That's the question. So, Amarle, we say, zachu kulam k'nichzei hamet. They've already got the Yerush. They're already divided evenly. We don't redistribute the assets. Now Gemara says, Ula bar Yishmael Amar, Matzvi date al de Rebbe Lazar. Right? He agrees with that shit, Rebbe Lazar. V'lo shniya, makes no difference. He shechalku v'charchi bem, achad mehem, or shiyabem achad mehem v'charka chalku. He says, look, it doesn't really make a difference whether Yibum occurred before or after they were divided the estate. It would still be divided equally. Zachu kulam b'nichsei hamet. So the Gemara says, "V'lama amar le? So why did he just only responding around the case where the division was before Yibum? If it really makes no difference either way." It says, "Ma deshal agiva." What he asked is what responded. That was the incident, case at hand. But the chiddush is, even if he did Yibum first, it would still be divided evenly. So v'lama lo sha'ale, but why didn't he ask that more, if you like, the better case, if you like, the case where he did Yibum first and then divided evenly? Because it says, the Amar Avani b'shem Rebbe Asa, b'chor shechalaka pashut chazka, which says, chazaka viter. What this means is because if you have a situation, where, let's go in the normal case of a b'chor is meant to get a double share. If the b'chor with the other brothers actually divides absolutely evenly, it's almost like he's been mevater on his rights to get a double share. So too here, if the person did Yibum first, one of the brothers, he's like a Bechor now. He's meant to be getting a double share. And if they, pardon me, went and divided evenly, then it's assumed that he's like mevater on his Chelek. So therefore, that case wasn't even a question. The bigger question that he had was the case where they divided evenly and then he did Yibum. Meaning he didn't know he was necessarily going to have his double share to be mevater. What's it in there? And the answer was no kfar chilek. Kfar zachul. They've already divided evenly, and we don't start redistributing assets. Okay, we've got a few more Rebbe Yehuda Sha'al Rebbe Lazar to go that they must pick up next year. Kol tov, have a good day, everyone.